Tech Talk with Lee Star.
Hello, Lee. How are you this morning?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
I'm all right, mate. I've got a couple of questions which I wanted to ask you in reference to printers. Look, we got quite a few emails as a result of what you and I talked about last week in reference to printers. So rather than asking you six or seven different questions in reference to the emails, I condensed it and put it into one. All right, okay. Here we go. We're talking printers again. I've got two questions. Actually, I lied. I've got two. All right. Our printer discussion started something. People want to know the best value printer on the market for the average person that may print a couple of pages a day. So they're not going to print a lot of material. They may print a couple of pages a day, or they may print nothing for a couple of days. But what's the best value printer, in your opinion, on the market for the average person that may only print a couple of pages every couple of days?
The question is, are they printing in black and white or colour?
I would suggest I would suggest most would want to print in colour.
If most are printing in colour, then an inkjet printer with probably refillable tanks will probably long-term give you the most value. And as I've said before, because those tanks last forever. As I'm only halfway through my set of tanks on an eco tank. So, and I've been using it for over almost 2 years now.
How do you refill these tanks? Is it an easy process?
Yeah, it's incredibly easy, actually. Credit to Epson and Canon for coming up with the concept. But basically, it draws from an old idea that people used to use years and years ago when ink cartridges were super expensive. They'd go to a local supplier, some sort of store nearby, and they'd buy a tank and they'd fill it up themselves. And it was seen as a process that the printer companies didn't like, they didn't agree with, until they joined in themselves and created these basically just bottles that come with the printer. You open it up on the top and you fill it up. It's literally if you could just imagine in the front of my printer, there's little windows into each tank, and you can actually see how the levels are. And they are literally, I think the black is halfway, my magenta is a little bit lower, and I've got four ink tanks. I've got one for black, cyan, magenta, and yellow, and you can see the actual liquid amount inside of them.
And are these printers expensive?
They range between $200 and $450. That's a little bit higher, I guess, than the $100 to $200 sort of price a lot of people expect a printer to be. The reason why I like them is that, as I said, the ink tanks take forever to get through. And one of the problems people don't factor in when it comes to ink tanks, aside from the fact that when you obviously buy a printer, we've said this every week for the past couple of weeks, is that you get a sort of like an entry level amount of ink in most inkjet printers. Aside from that, the thing that people don't factor in is that while your printing does consume ink, yes, that's true, anytime you do a print test or a head clean or something like that, that also consumes ink. And so the fact that I can actually see the ink and I know it's lasting about 2 years' time means I'm not wasting an amount of ink I can't see inside the small cartridge I'm getting.
Last printer question, and it comes from Alan. Alan says, if you have a 10-year-old printer, could you ask Lee, please, how much has technology changed in printing in the last 10 years? And I believe he has a laser printer.
If he's got a laser monochrome, not much. They're a little bit more efficient. They heat up better. They don't consume as much power. We're not talking a staggering difference. The bigger issue is more that if you've got a 10-year-old laser printer, your toner cartridges might actually begin to be retired. So your question is more about, do you can still find your toner cartridge? Are you missing things like wireless technology? Are you still required to plug in your printer from a USB perspective? I mean, in the past 10 years, almost every printer is wireless. So while they do have a USB plug for them, and they obviously need power, they're not cordless per se. Wireless just means not plugged into your computer. Our 10-year-old printer probably will. You'll still need to plug it in. And most devices these days do not have that requirement. They become wireless. You can print them from the cloud. You can print them from the computer without having it connected physically to your computer. So that's largely the difference. But from a 10-year-old perspective, you just have to make sure that he can still get his toner cartridge. You can still use printers from 10, 15, 20 years ago if they still work. That's totally fine. A lot of technologies like that, if you've got hard drives from that long ago, they will still possibly work. They'll start to be on their last legs. But in terms of modern technology, things like Wi-Fi, things like better print capabilities in terms of, I guess, the the dot level out of them. Laser printers don't have that issue, but yeah, they may use power a little bit better as well. If you still got it, keep using it until it dies. That's usually what I say.
Here's a question that shows your age. How much did you pay for your first ever laser printer? It couldn't print colour. It was only black and white. It was mono. How much did you pay? Do you remember?
Yeah, the first one, I remember how much I paid for my first expensive inkjet. My first expensive inkjet was about 15 years ago, and it cost me about $700. I remember for my first laser, when I bought them, they send them to me now, so I don't have to pay as much. when I first bought my laser, it was about $700. These days, you can pick them up for $100. But as I said, the technology in black and white lasers has changed a lot. In that they're inexpensive, as you noted before in last year's program. The color lasers, they're the ones that are expensive. So black and white, inexpensive. Technology is not remarkably complex anymore. But again, when you buy a cheap black and white laser printer, and there's nothing wrong with it, you'll get a cheap laser cartridge with it that will only print maybe 200 pages before it tapers out.
I'm showing my age, Lee. I'm not sure whether it was mono or whether it was color, but I remember the price. I paid $6,500 for my first laser printer.
That is a long time ago then, mate.
It was a long time ago. It was back in the late 80s. Back in the late 80s, yeah. $6,500. It was an Apple laser printer.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they did produce them back in the day.
Yeah. There you go. Not anymore. They don't produce them anymore. Let's talk AI. The next federal election, there's a story around today, and the headline says Australia isn't ready for the first AI election. And this is a warning that comes from the Electoral Commission. The next federal election is going to face unprecedented challenges from AI-generated content and fake news, according to Australia's top election official. We've seen it happen already in the United Kingdom. We've seen it happen in other elections. In the recent Indian election, it happened there with millions of citizens estimated to have seen deep fakes during the campaign. It happened in South Korea. It happened in the Ukraine, apparently. So, I mean, it is happening all over the place, and there's seemingly, I suppose, a story about AI almost every week, if certainly not every day, as we move towards AI. You're saying anyone buying a computer this year is likely to end up on an AI PC of sorts, which means it'll do AI things without needing to connect to the internet. I know there was a seminar, a conference that was held this week about security moving forward with AI. It seems to be there's just so much talk about AI at the moment, Lee, and a lot of it is all about security.
Yeah, the thing a lot of people don't realize is, well, AI has the potential to do cool things. It makes jingles for programs and for intros and whatnot. It can make text out of nothing, images out of nothing. There are genuine security risks with it. What it means when we say every computer is going to be an AI PC is that almost every phone sold this year will have a component inside of it called a neural processor. It means it can handle AI instructions to kind of do things in the background. And computers are having that too. Macs have had them for a long time. So technically any Mac sold in the past 5 years is an AI PC, even if it's a Mac. And Intel and AMD and all the other companies that make Windows versions will have the exact same thing this year as well. They've started rolling out. The reason why AI security is becoming this issue is that AI on a computer, effectively what it means is you can do the same sort of things that AI can do, but you don't have to connect to the internet to do them. So you can ask ChatGPT on Windows, which is called Copilot, to make things out of nothing. All of that stuff is normal. The critical problem and where that becomes an issue is that if you start storing, as you do, all of your data on your computer, and AI in Windows or AI in Mac can actually say, hey, I've got all this access to information. I can note take it for you. I can summarize. I can do all these things. Security experts have noted that criminals can start going into that data, and worse, they can start manipulating the outcomes of that. So the expectation this year is that AI is not just a hot topic, as you said. There's a story on it every week that we just cannot avoid it. There is going to be one story I submit to you every single week, it seems, that will be AI-based. It's going to be an issue for people at home. So for years, we've been told we need internet security. It doesn't help against scams. We know that, but you may actually need it to protect your data against the oncoming onslaught of criminals who are going to take advantage of the AI inside your computer.
And does this include, when you say your information, does this include your banking information and your passwords and all those sort of important things that we try to keep secret from everybody?
It can potentially. It depends on where it's stored. So a perfect example of this is built into Windows this year from Windows 11 with Copilot. Copilot is their version of AI. Effectively, it's integrated AI. And so that can this year talk to pretty much anything you store in your computer. The idea is if you put your banking information and your documents and anything else, as you would normally do on your computer, this can technically look into all of it. So you ask it a question. You don't have to go searching through the hundreds of files that you have to find what you need. That's good for users. It's also bad because if a security break occurs in your computer and a hacker gets in, then they could potentially use that information against you, leak it essentially to them. And we've known about this sort of thing happening pre-AI. It would be a form of malware called ransomware, where effectively you open up something and they basically lock down a portion of your drive or some files and then ask it for ransom. But this is slightly more lurid because at this point they can actually gain access to that data and then manipulate the models, so when you ask it something, that information is also leaked in turn to them. And so theoretically the answer to your question is yes, but we don't quite know to what level yet.
The story that I referred to, I mean, how are we going to, as the general public, how are we, and this would only happen obviously not on free-to-air TV, but on social media, on all sorts of different sites on social media, how is the average Joe Blow going to realise or work out that it's not Peter Dutton up there on the screen telling you something that's ridiculous, or it's not Anthony Albanese telling you something up there on the screen that's ridiculous as part of an advertising campaign towards an election?
I want to say best judgment, but the answer is that's a really bad excuse and a bad reason. I mean, there was a study the other day that said something like 54% of people are using TikTok as a search engine. Granted, that's probably a younger demographic, but TikTok doesn't have these verification. A lot of it comes down to a form of misinformation judging or a board to effectively block all this stuff out. But it is getting increasingly difficult. Google has found that it doesn't always have the ability to block or lower AI information. It's not perfect at it, but it's probably got the best, some of the best tools at it. Facebook obviously doesn't do a fantastic job. The approach we've got at the moment seems to be it's mostly down to news organizations, journalists, publishers to make sure that they check their sources. But again, general public, if you see this stuff and it's too good to be true, it probably is, it still doesn't account for the fact that you can also make anyone in media say anything you want effectively with just an AI model. And as you've seen from the AI-generated music, it actually works the same for AI-generated voices. It's not very difficult to capture a sample of what you or I or anyone else in the media is saying and create a model against this. It literally only takes 30 seconds of content.
We've heard of dumb phones. Tell us what a dumb phone is. There's a new style of dumb phone that's on its way.
Yeah, a dumb phone is effectively a phone that you don't spend a lot of time on. So we would call an older phone, like the old Nokias, the old Ericsson, things like that, we would call them a dumb phone. You know, a lot of people still have them, for what it's worth. They are mainly the people that are actually at risk during the Telstra 3G shutdown. They've got older phones. They don't spend internet time on them. They have dumb phones, and all of those older phones don't actually have support for the 4G networks. But there's a new style of dumb phone actually popping up, which is still designed to be relatively savvy. It's got 5G, it's got a fingerprint reader, it's got a camera, but the screen is made so you don't spend as much time on it. So it's a black and white screen, as an example. You can still take pictures, but you won't spend as much time. It's specifically made to let you still enjoy the world, but not feel like you've got a hobbled, old-style dumb phone. And it's coming from a company in America called Lightphone. It's probably going to be more expensive than I genuinely think it should be, because hitting around $1,000 is where it's expected in Australia. It will still be fairly modern, but much kind of like an e-reader. You'll use it for a specific purpose. You'll use it to check your messages, make phone calls, and occasionally take photos, which seems like it's a lot of money. If it's someone like you or I, we'd probably say, hey, I can grab a real camera and a cheap dumb phone and get the same sort of thing out of it. But there's a lot of people who are trying to have what's called a digital detox, which is that they're a generation that says, I don't want to stare at my phone. I had a doctor who was exactly like this. He said, I don't want to stare at my phone anymore. I just want my phone to actually function as a phone so I don't get absorbed in the doom scrolling that occurs with everyday life. So this style of dumb phone is beginning to make an appearance, which is an expensive dumb phone that lets you do more than just the cheap dumb phones that have previously been populating the market.
Last but not least, tell me about this new watch that came out for Android owners. It's a Samsung smartwatch that's maybe not as expensive as other smartwatches.
Yeah, so as Apple owners, if you've got an iPhone, the Apple Watch is only specifically for iPhone users. You can't use it on Android. And they've previously had the Apple Watch SE, which is an inexpensive Apple Watch and quite admittedly a good one. It's one of my favorite recommendations for a lot of people. Android owners don't usually get that. There are inexpensive smartwatches for Androids, but they're not usually fantastic. Samsung does make great ones. They're about to release, literally in the next couple of weeks, the Galaxy Watch FE, which is admittedly very much like last year's Galaxy Watch, the premium one, but for $150 less. It includes an ECG, it includes heart rate. It'll only come in one size, 40 mil, so it's different from the predecessor, which came in 40 and 44, so small and big. The reason why I'm cautious about this one, I love the idea of an inexpensive smartwatch for a lot of people, but it's worth noting, we're coming up to that that point in time where Samsung typically releases new watch models. It will probably happen in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So while this one is about to come out, I sit there and go, well, that's good, but I caution, the high-end model, the new high-end model, is literally about to come out, which will push last year's model slightly down in price. You'll still be able to find it. So this is very much a case of, this is good for consumers, it's good for Android owners who want a decent smartwatch but don't want to pay a lot of money for it, but at the same time, there's probably something literally around the corner that will do the exact same thing.
Okay, Lee, thank you as always for spending some time with us on a Sunday morning. We appreciate it. We will speak with you again, same time, same place, next Sunday.
Sounds good. I'll bring an AI story to match.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. See you, Lee. That's Lee Stark. If you've got any tech questions for Lee, you can send them to me through the website, and we'll put them to Lee. If you want to go to his website, it's Lee, L-E-I-G-H, at pickr.com.au.